Ever been ringside and got blood on you?
Oh, all the time.
This is the Sports Illustrated Boxing Podcast.
Anthony Joshua is a composed and ferocious finisher. Watch this.
Andy Ruiz is the heavyweight champion.
Hosted by SI's Chris Mannix.
It was really embarrassing.
That was my moment.
Now with interviews, analysis, and everything going on in the world of boxing.
When you have talent, you are given another chance.
Here's Chris Mannix.
All right, busy week in boxing. I say week because I do want to get into the release of the Showtime schedule. Keith Idek, senior writer, boxingscene.com here, joining me for an emergency podcast. He is a friend of the pod. He is a friend of the emergency pod, which I don't know if we can call them emergency pods anymore, Keith. That we keep doing them like every other week. So, you know, they're starting to become just part of the cycle, I think.
Emergency is a little strong regardless, but yeah, let's call it a bi-weekly second pod. How about that?
Yeah, it's like we've got something to say, so we need a forum to actually say it. Yeah, get it off our chest. All right, we'll get to the Triller Show. We'll get to the Showtime reveal. I want to start, though, down in South Florida, where Demetrius Andrade defended his middleweight title for a fourth time against Liam Williams. Better fight than I expected it to be. Williams did what he said he was going to do. He applied pressure. Andrade was just the superior fighter throughout most of the fight. Afterwards, we heard something of a familiar refrain, where Demetrius Andrade called for fights with other champions. Eddie Hearn, his promoter, who has been getting more and more frustrated by the inability to make big fights for Demetrius Andrade, he was more emphatic after the fight. Here's what Eddie told me in the immediate aftermath of Andrade beating Liam Williams.
Champions are supposed to fight champions, okay? You've got guys out there like Jermell Charlo. You know, his brother's doing a great job. He's going through the divisions fighting champions. Jermell Charlo is fighting, I can't remember his name. What's his name?
Juan Montiel.
Right, Juan Montiel. Well, I mean, Conor McGregor said it best. You know, I don't know what he's doing. He's got an opportunity. If he doesn't want to fight on his own, we've made him a massive offer. Demetrius will go and fight on Fox. It's not a problem. He's not expensive. He's going to cost him the same as Derevchenko. As you said, Jermell Charlo against Demetrius Andrade is a big, big fight. It's two great American world champions. Why are the champions not looking to face Demetrius Andrade? He was hurt tonight.
So, Keith, let's start with the fight itself. You've seen a lot of Demetrius Andrade fights over the years. What did you think of his performance?
You know, Chris, it started off like a lot of Demetrius Andrade fights. He gets off to fast starts. He knocked down Liam Williams in the second round. Looked like he might get him out of there early, maybe by the second or third round. Credit to Liam Williams. Showed a lot of toughness, a lot of resolve. You know, maybe to some degree, Andrade let him off the hook, as he has been criticized for doing in other fights, maybe. But I think it was more...
Do you think he does that? Do you think he does that? I mean, it's a good point that you make. Like, does he let guys off the hook? Because we've seen this, right? Walter Kautendakwa, Luke Keeler, Maciek Sulecki. I mean, there's a pattern, as you point out there, about what Andrade does. Do you think he lets guys off the hook? I mean, how do you interpret how these fights tend to play out?
Yeah, I think there's an element of it to that, Chris, because he does it repeatedly. I mean, there's some guys, you know, he should have gotten Kautendakwa, who was a big puncher and hadn't fought many high-level guys. You know, I'm not saying he can't punch, but I thought he should have gotten him out of there before he did. I think maybe in the case of Liam Williams, it was more that he realized that Liam Williams could punch. He didn't want to get careless and get clipped with something that, you know, could have changed the course of the fight. So I think he was more careful with Liam Williams. And Liam Williams is a very tough guy who was in great physical condition. And Chris, I'll say this, man, you know, I understand that Demetrius Andrade is 33 years old now and his legs might not be what they once were. I thought he still looked very good overall in the fight. But it was a tougher fight maybe than the scorecards indicated. I think it was 118-109s and a 116-111. I thought it was closer than 118-109. Williams had some strong rounds toward the end of the fight when I thought Demetrius Andrade faded a little bit. And at the end of the ninth round, Chris, I'm sure you saw it as well, Liam Williams hurt Demetrius Andrade with a right hand because he reacted very weirdly where he kind of like went into the ropes a little bit and then certainly – you know, held on to stop Liam Williams from following up on that shot. He was definitely hurt at the end of the ninth round, but then recovered and, you know, and obviously won the fight. His right uppercut was his money punch in the fight, landed it a bunch of times. I was there for him all night. You know,
where did that come from, Keith? I didn't get a chance to ask him about that, but like, I hadn't seen that uppercut from him. Not like that, not to that extent where he was using it as a weapon all night long.
I think he just saw something in Liam Williams maybe where it was there more for him against Liam Williams maybe than other fighters. I've always kind of felt, and I understand it makes fighters more susceptible to getting countered and everything, but I think the uppercut overall is maybe the most underutilized punch in boxing. And he took advantage of that in the fight yesterday. So, you know, overall, I'd probably give Demetrius Andrade a B. I mean, he won convincingly. There was no discrepancy about who won the fight for sure. But maybe a tougher fight than Andrade was expecting and maybe a lot of other people were expecting, although the odds on the fight were not that wide. I think he wasn't even a 4-1 favorite. He might have been -375 or so, something like that. So a lot of British money, of course, coming in on Liam Williams, which obviously affects the odds of the fight. But a good performance from Liam Williams. You know, he came in as an underdog for sure, had not fought anyone nearly as good as Andrade in his career, lost twice to Liam Smith. So I think he did wonders for his career. He's only 28 years old and can climb back into contention for another title shot. But as far as Demetrius Andrade goes, Chris, you would think that he maybe showed something on Saturday, some vulnerability that might make guys like Jermall Charlo or Gennady Golovkin want to fight him maybe more so than they've shown thus far. I don't know that that's going to be true, but you would think, and that's what Eddie Hearn said, and I agree with what he said. I mean, he showed some holes here. He showed some weaknesses. And again, he's 33 years old. His legs aren't what they once were. He's not old. You know, he's still probably toward the back end of his physical prime, but he's 33. I mean, he's not what he was 5 or 6 years ago. So I just hope some of these fights can be made, but I don't have much optimism about those fights being made more today than I did on Friday, even with the way Andrade looked in the fight.
I think one of the things I pointed out early in the week, and I think it proved to be true, is that I don't know that Andrade trained as well as he usually does for this fight because, I mean, he wasn't motivated. Like, he didn't want this fight. Like, he wanted Billy Joe Saunders. He wanted, you know, Gennady Golovkin or any other, you know, unification fight or a fight at 168. You know, Liam Williams was just kind of forced on him. And I remember seeing Andrade at the Canelo-Smith fight in December, and like, he was enjoying his life back then. That was just, you know, 4 months before the fight. Then I remember seeing him again at the Canelo-Yildirim fight, and he was enjoying his life at that point there, and he was only 2 months to go before his fight. So I didn't get the sense that this was the most committed that Demetrius Andrade was in training camp, and I think that exposed him to some fatigue during that fight and to getting clipped the way he didn't hurt, as you said, in that ninth round. So, you know, I am a one-man, like, Demetrius Andrade advocate. I own that. Like, I want to see this guy in a big fight, but I'm with you. I don't have any optimism that we're going to see Andrade in a big fight in 2021, and it's really maddening to understand why. I mean, you know, I reported this last week about Golovkin and Murata. You know, they're negotiating the deal for New Year's Eve, huge holiday for boxing in Japan. People that don't know, New Year's Eve in Japan is a huge boxing day, so Golovkin Murata would be a mega event in Japan on New Year's Eve. But is Gennady Golovkin really going to take another year off and wait for a unification fight with Ryota Murata? Or is he going to, you know, get another big payday and take on the challenge that is Demetrius Andrade? I don't know how you feel about this, Keith, but, like, you know, when Golovkin was coming up, and I'm sure you did this too, like, we kind of wrote when guys were ducking him. Like, and we advocated for him, but we were, you know, trying to point out this guy is great. He should be in big fights. We kind of treated him like I'm treating Demetrius Andrade right now. Like, I want to see Gennady Golovkin in big fights. Now that he's got a little bit of power, it just seems like he's doing exactly what he hated that guys did to them. I mean, you put Golovkin in with Demetrius Andrade, like, Andrade is not Rigondeaux in his prime. Like, he's not this, like, incredibly difficult, like, he's a tough fighter, but he's not impossible to beat. Like, Golovkin, to me, that would be a coin flip type of fight at worst with Demetrius Andrade. So I get frustrated with Golovkin that he is just kind of sitting there on the sidelines. There's no big fight for him right now at 160 outside of Murata. and he's just going to let this opportunity to fight in the summertime against Andrade just go by. And I've heard from people that, you know, Golovkin's team has said they don't want to fight Andrade. And that to me is really disappointing. Not surprising, but really disappointing.
Yeah, and I think we really sense some of that frustration, Chris, in Eddie Hearn's voice when he spoke to you yesterday. I mean, he said some – I was pretty surprised that he said what he said about Gennady Golovkin. He's Golovkin's co-promoter, as you well know, and he was critical of Golovkin not wanting to fight Andrade and kind of wanting to wait another – what is it, 8 months before he – 8.5 months, basically, before he would fight Murata in Japan. I don't know if he's going to sit on the sidelines for that long, but I can't imagine another one-year layoff is a great thing for a 39-year-old fighter. Now, he might be paid so much to go fight Murata, who, if people don't know, is a mainstream superstar in Japan. I mean, he's a star, and like not a boxing
that's
star.
Like a, I mean, that's like a Tokyo Dome fight over there.
Absolutely.
Like that's 50,000, 60,000 in next December.
Yeah, it really is, and he's a mainstream star. He's not just a boxing star there. So he'll be paid handsomely to go there to fight Murata. So I understand that. But taking another 8.5 months off and having more than a year in between the Zerameda fight and the Murata fight, I don't think is a great idea for him. I also would sense that, you know, DAZN and Matchroom would be very frustrated if they can't get him in the ring to fight someone else, particularly Andrade, who they also have under contract, because you have nothing to do with Andrade if you can't get him to fight Charlo. And then you can't get him to fight, or you can't get Charlo to fight him, and you can't get Golovkin to fight him. Who is Andrade going to fight? I mean, he's under contract for several more fights as well, and he just made his mandatory, and people aren't all that interested. You know, another person who might deserve some criticism here is Jaime Munguia. He's the number one contender for his title, and he's not, you know, beating the drums to fight Demetrius Andrade either, and he's with DAZN and Golden Boy and Zanfer, and you know, that fight should be easier to make as well. And he is the mandatory challenger. Liam Williams satisfied that mandatory obligation for Demetrius Andrade, but Munguia didn't want to fight him either. So, you know, Demetrius, whatever is left of the prime of Demetrius Andrade's career is fading away day by day, and he can't get anyone to fight him. The Golovkin thing, I don't want to hurt your feelings by saying anything bad about the Charlo Andrade fight, but the Golovkin fight should be even easier to make. I mean, they're both on the quote unquote same side of the street. They have the same promoter, the same network that they have deals with. I mean, it should be a fight that's makeable, and Golovkin just doesn't seem interested in doing it.
Yeah, I'm just disappointed in Gennady because there were so many years that people pushed for him, that, you know, took the phone calls from Tom Loeffler and, you know, and advocated that, you know, Golovkin needs to be put in a big fight with Canelo, with Sergio Martinez, with Miguel Cotto. Like, there were people backing him. And now here we are when there are big winnable fights for him that are out there. And it just seems like he's cherry picking at the moment. And I don't love that. I didn't love that when guys were doing it to him. And I don't love it when he's doing to guys right now. The Charlo thing just is going to bother me until the day I die, because Charlo, and we're going to get to the Showtime slate, and the Showtime slate is very good. Like, there are fights I'm very excited about on Showtime's schedule that was announced for the next 5 months. The Charlo Juan Montiel fight is an enormous piece of shit. Like, it is one of the worst headlining main events that you could possibly make. Montiel, for people that don't know, is coming off a first round knockout win over the artist formerly known as James Kirkland. Like, this was like a shell of James Kirkland at that point. He was just the name at that point. Before that, go back and watch it on YouTube. Montiel was pancaked by Jaime Munguia. That was a brutal knockout back in 2017. After that, in between the win over Kirkland and the loss to Munguia, you have a draw with Hugo Centeno. And Centeno is the same guy that Charlo just obliterated, you know, a few fights earlier. So I don't understand this. Like, this is, like, Jermall Charlo, I've often said to his face, like, is a excellent fighter, a talented fighter. But you go look at his opponents since he hit 160, and, like, Matt Korobov is the best fighter. And that was, like, his second fight at 160. He has wasted the better part of the last 5 years of his career in nothing fights. And now here we are in 2021. In June, he's going to take that fight. And then what? Like, and then what is he going to do? Is he really going to fight David Benavidez at 168? Is that a better fight for him than Demetrius Andrade? I don't think so. The Charlo stuff is just going to bother me. And look, I understand promoters lie all the time and they spin how things are discussed. I think Eddie Hearn's telling the truth with what he's talking about with Andrade and Charlo. Like, I think he's made a really big offer to Jermall Charlo via Louis DeCubis, the manager, co-manager for Charlo, and personally to Charlo via email. And I think he's being transparent. I know he's being transparent when he says that Andrade will cross the street and go over to Fox or Showtime and fight Charlo on a PBC-affiliated network. So I don't know how much longer we can stay on this merry-go-round, Keith, where we've got Demetrius Andrade, Jermall Charlo, who, even if you're not as high on it as I am, like where I think it's like the third biggest fight you can make in all of boxing, I get I might be a little hyperbolic there, but it's like top five. Like, it is a great fight that you can make between two in-their-prime American middleweights. And I just, and you probably don't think it's top five either, but as I see you laughing on the Zoom, but this is a excellent fight that can be made. Both guys can make a boatload of money. And I think the winner of that fight will have a case that he belongs on a pound for pound list. So I just, this is just a constant Ferris wheel of nonsense that we can't get off of.
Yeah, it's frustrating as it relates to Charlo, Chris, in the sense that he did take a step up in class in his last fight. I mean, he fought Sergey Derevyanchenko, who, you know, I think you've said and other people have said they thought beat Gennady Golovkin when they fought at Madison Square Garden, and one of the best fights I've ever seen. I mean, it was one of the best action fights I've ever seen.
Correct. That's probably his best win. That's his best win. Not Khorabov. Khorabov, it's better win than Khorabov.
Well, Khorabov is, look, he's an underrated guy. He's had some injury problems toward the end of his career, but he gave Jermall Charlo a very difficult fight. I don't think that he won.
There was one scorecard there. What was it?
It was Larry Hazard. Larry Hazard Jr. Boy.
That was, holy moly. I think that was 118-109.
Yeah,
it
was 119-109 or something. It was brutal.
Nonsense.
But Charlo, you know, he takes a step up in class against Derevyanchenko, who had not fought since he fought Golovkin. And he's coming off a great performance against Golovkin. And Jermall Charlo handled Derevyanchenko far easier than either Gennady Golovkin or Daniel Jacobs. Daniel Jacobs beat him by split decision. Gennady Golovkin won a unanimous decision very narrowly in a fight that some people thought Golovkin lost. Worst case scenario, it was an extremely competitive fight that could have maybe gone either way. Charlo beats him with ease. I mean, he just completely outclassed Derevyanchenko. He's much bigger, of course, in height and stature and everything, but you know, he beat him soundly. I mean, it was the best, in my opinion, it's clearly the best middleweight win of his career. You could probably quibble that, you know, the way he beat Julian Williams in their title fight, maybe that's the best win of his career, but I think you could argue that.
I think the Williams probably better, but
only,
yeah,
maybe only because close. Derevyanchenko had lost twice before that.
Yeah.
I could see that. But the point is, he had taken a step up in competition at middleweight, looked like he was ready to fight the types of guys that he has long said that he is willing and able to fight. And then you take such a significant step backward here by fighting Juan Montiel. I mean, I don't even know what to say. It's bad. And the meanwhile, his brother is cleaning out the junior middleweight division. You know, as part of the announcement, he's fighting Brian Castaño, and the winner obviously will be the fully unified 154-pound champion. So while Jermell is doing those types of things, he's kind of regressing here, and at some point he's going to have – if he really wants these fights, he's going to have to say to Al Haymon, I don't care what it takes to make these fights happen, although he's paid very well. And I do believe that Eddie Hearn sent that email, the $7 million offer in the email. You know, I don't know that email is the best way to go about making an offer necessarily, but I do believe that he did it, and I do believe the funds were there to make that fight happen.
Check your spam folder on that one. Check spam, see if it went through. And by the way, Eddie said this to me over the phone when we were talking earlier in the week. Like, say what you want about Eddie and his offers, but like, he's been backstopped by real money throughout the last 3 years.
Absolutely.
Like this is not fake money.
I don't think that there is no dispute about the money being there for sure. And honestly probably would have overpaid Charlo just to make the fight happen. I mean, I don't know that it's necessarily worth $7 million for either guy, but I get it. I mean, you're trying to overpay to entice the guy into the fight. But Eddie said yesterday that he's willing to allow Demetrius Andrade to go fight. He said Fox. It would probably be Showtime at this point, but that he would allow him, Demetrius Andrade, to go there for, in effect, what Sergey Derevyanchenko was paid to fight Charlo, which is a little over $3 million, basically, right? So if he's going to make a little over $3 million and Charlo presumably would be paid more than that, you know, somewhere in the 5 to 6 range probably, because Al Haymon takes care of his fighters. Let's just say that's you're talking about 9 million-ish in purses. Then it becomes a pay-per-view fight because you're not putting that fight on Showtime. And then is it doable? Then you'd have to package. I think you'd have to package it with something else, like a good co-feature to put that on pay-per-view to make that fight happen. But as it relates to Charlo, which is what you're originally talking about here and his level of opposition, he's taken a dramatic step backward here by fighting Juan Montiel on June 19th in Houston. They haven't determined the venue yet, but it's going to be in his hometown of Houston. And it's disappointing. But also, to go back to Jaime Munguia, Montiel is rated 4th. So this is an optional defense for Jamal Charlo, another optional defense. But the number one contender is Jaime Munguia. Do I think that Jamal Charlo would beat Jaime Munguia? Yes, I think he would beat him convincingly. But I think people would – he's undefeated. He's the number one challenger. And people would want to see that much more. And again, I understand there are some network and streaming service and promotional obstacles toward making the fight. And I don't know that he's been declared the mandatory just yet, but he is the number one contender. So you'd much rather see him in that type of fight, in which I think he would be a big favorite also, but it wouldn't be a laughable fight like this Montiel fight.
I think Jaime Munguia is like at some point going to be number one in all 4 sanctioning bodies rankings and still not, and, you know, take a
and still fight Demetrius Ballard. I mean, you know.
Well, now we get to go back to Maciek Zielecki. That's right.
All guys.
Like June 19th.
He won't fight Andrade, but he'll fight guys that Andrade has beaten, I guess.
Hey, afternoon show. A lot of Polish subs there coming into the zone to watch Zielecki. Yeah, look, Eddie. As far as Eddie moving Andrade over, like. I mean, Eddie's run out of options for Andrade. Like, the show Andrade fought Williams on was in the afternoon in the U.S. It's not a sub driver in the U.S. Mm. It's done that way to take advantage of the U.K. audience, the Wales audience that might be willing and eager to watch Liam Williams. So I have no doubt that Andrade could walk across the street. And I don't know. You know, the other thing is, and I say this as someone, everybody knows that I call fights for DAZN, but like, if you're a fighter, what the hell do you care who is broadcasting your fight? Like, if you can get $7 million in your hand, like, isn't that what it's all about? Aren't you in this? How many times, Keith, have we heard about prize fighting? Like, how we hear about prize fighting. It's for money. Like, what do you care, like, where that money's coming from? Who's writing the check?
Well, the interesting thing, Chris, is recently Jamal Charlo was on Brian Custer's podcast, and he had him on for a good 35 to 40 minutes. It was one of the more perplexing interviews that I've seen in quite some time, because Jamal Charlo was in one breath saying that he has no interest in going up to 168 pounds because he wants to become the fully unified champion at 160 pounds, to later in the interview saying that he would go up to 168 pounds for the right fights. He was just all over the place in this interview, and he said some things that I just found very odd. And he didn't say it in that interview, but he had previously said that the Benavidez fight – now, I'll preface what I'm about to say by saying this. I understand that going up to 168 pounds to fight Benavidez when Benavidez does not have one of the titles makes it a little less attractive. I do understand that. I mean, if he was this WBC champion and Charlo was getting an opportunity to become a three-weight world champion, it would be much more enticing for him. The money still probably would be good for that fight for both guys. But he said several things, including that if David Benavidez wasn't vaccinated, that he wasn't going to fight him, and that he's too young. He's not even over 25 years old, and he wouldn't. I mean, those are bizarre reasons to not fight someone. I would much more hang my hat on he doesn't have a title, what does it do for me, as the reason for not fighting him than the fact that he's not fully vaccinated and he's not 25 years old yet. Those are bizarre answers.
To be clear, nobody's allowed to fight with COVID, just so we know. We should know this by now.
Right. Like, I don't even know what he meant by that, because like you said, it's not like you're going to fail a COVID test and then they're going to allow you to get into the ring.
No.
And again, it was a baffling interview to me, because it just seemed he was just saying a lot of things that were going to make him a target for criticism, I felt. And he, again, just came off fighting one of the top five or six middleweights in the world and beat him convincingly. So I don't think that it's that he doesn't want the fights, but some of the things that he said or continues to say make you wonder what is going on with him.
Yeah. I just think you said it. At some point he's going to have to go to Al Haymon and say, I want this fight. Let's make this fight happen. Or else we're going to get stuck on this Ferris wheel, and we're never getting off. All right, let's move on. Also on Saturday, we had Triller making its return to pay-per-view on a show headlined by Jake Paul, taking on retired MMA fighter Ben Askren. Also on that card was Regis Progre against Ivan Redkach. That fight ended, let's call it bizarrely. This, Keith, was... It was kind of a shit show out there. You had celebrities who were part of the broadcast, musical acts that seemed to go on forever. I think I saw Pete Davidson blow smoke in Al Bernstein's face at one point. Like, it was something, man. You watched the Tyson Jones fight, you know, from November. Now we have this one. I mean, what did you make of Triller 2.0?
I would say that shit show is probably the best way to describe what we all saw last night, Chris, because yes, there were things for everyone. There were probably too many things that they're trying to cram into one show to entertain different groups of people, I guess. But at one point I walked away from the computer I had this on my laptop, and I had the Tony Harrison fight on my TV, and I came back and I don't know, Ric Flair was standing by these two slobs slapping each other in the face. And I'm like, what's happening? Like, what is this? You're already wasting a lot of time to get to the actual fights, which I understand, because they're catering to different audiences, you know, with musical acts and Snoop Dogg and Pete Davidson. I'm a big Pete Davidson fan. Funny dude. Love the King of Staten Island. Watched it a bunch of times.
Great movie.
I think he's great on SNL and everything. I think he put it best when he said, I'm going to have to fire my agent for getting me involved in this last night. Probably true. Because he was out of place and they doing these roving interviews and everything. I think at one point he might have said that Jake Paul is a piece of shit or something to that effect. I mean, he said, look, there were so many things going on last night, Chris, that were bizarre. I mean, should we even talk about Oscar De La Hoya? I don't know. I mean,
I think we have to at some point. Let's put a pin in that for a second. And just this is, you know, the wave of the future, at least the immediate future in boxing, because we know Triller's going to do this at least once in June and once in July, right. When De La Hoya is purportedly going to come back. I mean, I didn't gain anything from it. I mean, the Progre Redkach fight, I don't know what Redkach was doing there. Like, he went down and it looked like a clean punch to me. And then the whole thing. And then you got Progre, who didn't take his training seriously for this fight at all either. I mean, he came in at what, 143 for this event. I don't know in terms of boxing, like mainstream boxing, that didn't do anything for me. That's
right. Well, Chris, there was one actual boxing match on, I want to say this, Chris, because I understand, you know, the people, the supporters of Triller and YouTube boxing and all that kind of stuff will say, oh, you boxing guys are just shitting on it because they're having success and everything. Listen, if people want to buy these fights where Jake Paul is fighting people who've never boxed before, and there's a market for it, go ahead and do it. I mean, as long as you can make money off of it, there's no harm in that. I mean, there's no reason why they can't if they can continue selling it to Jake Paul's fan base. And, you know, some of the other guys he seems to be like the only one doing it with any consistency right now. But if there are other people, like his brother, of course, Logan Paul, who still might fight Floyd Mayweather, you know, go ahead. I mean, continue doing it. There's nothing wrong with it. But I'll say this, as a boxing, you know, obviously we cover boxing for a living. And the one real fight that was on the card last night ended in such a way that I think that Ivan Redcatch should be suspended, and at least a portion of his purse should be withheld permanently from him, because what he did last night was he perpetrated a fraud on the public. There's no two ways about it. He was not hit with a low blow. He was hit on the he was grazed on the I believe it was the left side of his body, with a partial body punch from Regis Prograis, right? And then he's rolling around holding his groin. He wasn't hit low. Like, what the hell what was that? I mean, he's literally, he made up something that didn't even come close to happening and sold it to the point where he was removed from the ring on a stretcher.
That was wild.
I mean, he really should be suspended. Now, this is two fights in a row with Redcatch. He bit Danny Garcia in his last fight. It went the distance. But he did bite Danny Garcia. And now this is, you know, I'm not advocating biting people, but this was worse, I thought, because he really, look, he was in a fight that he was clearly losing, realized that Regis Prograis was well on his way to knocking him out. And I don't say this often about fighters because I have, you know, as you do, Chris, I have a real respect for what it takes to get into the ring at all. So I don't take it lightly when I say something like this, but he was looking for a way out of that fight. And he unfortunately found it.
Yeah. And it just was another bizarre element of that entire night. Before I get to Oscar, you know, Jake Paul is insisting to every camera that's put in front of him that he's a real fighter. So far, he's beaten, you know, a fellow YouTuber who was just completely overmatched. He knocks out my old friend Nate Robinson in vicious fashion. And now he knocks out Ben Askren, who, if you had watched any film of Ben Askren, you knew he couldn't punch. So it's like, you know, I didn't know it was going to happen in the first round, but that was what was going to happen. Mm-hmm. Do you have any interest, Keith, in like seeing Jake Paul try to face like a real cruiserweight? Like, does that do anything for you? Or do you think this is just kind of the way it should go? Like, let him keep fighting these celebrity death matches until he can no longer make money on it.
It's tricky in the matchmaking sense, Chris, because he doesn't have any experience either. It's not like he's some guy who has some wealth of boxing experience and he's picking on people who've never fought before. I mean, he has fought for, I guess, once as an amateur and three times as a professional now, but he doesn't have a lot of experience. So it's hard to, like, because what type, if they don't do the types of things that they're doing, having him fight a former NBA player or a former MMA fighter, who are you going to have him fight? Because otherwise he'd just be fighting nondescript cruiserweights with, like, you know, 500 records or worse, maybe, because those are the types of people that he should be fighting because he doesn't have any experience. So he's a strong guy. I mean, it looks like he can punch, obviously, but I don't know how you go about matching him when you're trying not only to develop him as a fighter, or so he says, but you're also trying to capitalize on his popularity, because you just can't put him in there against any boxer that no one's ever heard of and sell it for $50. So they have to kind of find these, these opponents. And I don't know how you're going to go about doing that from here on out. I mean, maybe they'll find another MMA guy for him to fight, but like who, you know, and there aren't a lot of great cruiserweights that people know anyway, but I don't know when he would be ready for that type of fight. You know, he probably needs, if he were to fight a real cruiserweight contender, he probably needs 10 more fights, right? I mean, he's not a finished product by any sense. I mean, kudos to him for doing what he's doing and capitalizing on his popularity and everything, but he's not ready to fight a world-class cruiserweight at this point, right? I mean, so what do? I mean, it's a weird position.
We would never expect a fighter with, you know, like, take like Chavez Jr., for example, a guy who had almost no amateur background when he turned pro. You know, how slowly was he brought along? And like he was, and that's a guy with a boxing,
that's what I mean,
pedigree. Yeah. I mean, he was slow played there. I did have a promoter call me on Sunday and say, look, I believe I could get Jake Paul ranked in the top 15 in a couple of years. Like they could find a way through opponents, you know, I mean, and rankings, of course, can be manipulated, and you know, who knows, the WBA might sanction like an interim title for him at some point. But I think that if he wanted to get real serious about it over the next couple of years, I think we could see him, you know, emerge as a real ball. I think there's actual talent there. I don't think he's goofy. I think mm-hmm. he's got some legitimate skills, got some legitimate pop. He seems pretty disciplined when it comes to the sport. I think we could see him do that. But it's not, to your point, it's not going to entertain in the way that a fight against a Ben Askren entertained. Like, I don't know what kind of business that show did. I mean, Jake Paul went on Instagram and said like 1.3 million. I don't believe that. Like, I just don't. And even if you did, you don't know pay-per-view results on Sunday. Like, that just doesn't. Right. I mean, how many times have we done that, Keith?
Yeah. Well, let's not go down that rabbit hole. But but Chris, he was paid. I was told that his guarantee last night was $2 million. So yep. If he's making that kind of money fighting in these, you know, it's not celebrity boxing, whatever you want to call it. Right. I mean,
it kind of is. It's sanctioned celebrity boxing is what it is.
Yeah. But he considers himself a real fighter. So he finds it insulting to call it celebrity boxing for whatever it's worth. But point being, if he goes and fights real cruiserweights that no one's ever heard of, and there's no, you know, like with Ben Askren, you know, the MMA fans were willing to buy it because he's a former UFC fighter and people want to see Jake Paul get knocked out and everything. Well, there's no such market for unknown cruiserweights. So then he would have to take a pay cut to fight guys. Why would he do that? If he just made $2 million last night to fight Ben Askren in a fight that didn't last 3 minutes, he's not going to look to take pay cuts. So again, I think it's a tricky thing for him moving forward, that while he's committed to being a real fighter, I mean, how committed in the sense that if you're going to build yourself incrementally like a cruiserweight contender, they're not going to keep paying you that way.
Yeah. I think you honestly need like retired light heavyweights, like who are well known. Like let's say like Sergey Kovalev retired for a couple of years and then he wanted to fight Kovalev and I don't know, something along those lines but it would be the only way I could see him fighting a actual boxer. Until then, I think it's going to be this the rest of the way, which is fine. Like, you know, more power to him. You can make millions of dollars, you know, fighting for 60 seconds. By all means, man.
But Chris, how long, the thing I will say, like with everything else, how long can you continue doing that? Because even if you have a real fan base, people are going to want to see him tested at some point, like truly tested. So how long can you continue doing these types of things and generating the type of business that they're claiming that they generated last night?
No, that's a good point. You've got to keep finding marketable opponents. I don't know who they are. And maybe somebody's going to have to give you a real test, you know, where you go 3, 4, 5 rounds and you have to show a little something in the ring. Lastly, on the Triller fight, we mentioned De La Hoya. Not a great look for Oscar in on this show. I mean, he was clearly, you know, under the influence of something, you know, in that sitting up there on the broadcast. He just was, I mean, it was all over social. It was like one of the things you saw repeatedly on boxing Twitter was like, what's going on with Oscar? What's going on with Oscar? Yeah. What's going on with Oscar? I don't want to get too deep in the psychological weeds on what's going on with Oscar, but man, it just, you know, that's a tough look to see him on TV looking and sounding like that.
Chris, I don't know whose responsibility it was last night. Someone should have removed him from that broadcast at a certain point because I understand that people on Twitter, they think it's funny or most people seem to think it's funny and everything. And he was saying some outlandish things and he was kind of yelling throughout the Frank Mir, Steve Cunningham fight. It's not really funny when someone has a problem like that, like for his family and everything. But whose responsibility is it to take him? Someone should have, I don't know who it is, and I'm not blaming anyone in particular, but someone should have removed him from that broadcast. That should not have continued for as long as it did, and it's more than unfortunate that it did.
Yeah, and look, he's also out there teasing that he's coming back against the best. No, he's not. Like, he's going to come back against an MMA fighter, probably. You know, there's been reports about Eddie Alvarez from, you know, ONE MMA Boxing, and I'm sure it's going to be somebody along those lines. I would not, for people that watched that broadcast and came away thinking that like De La Hoya is going to fight Gennady Golovkin on Triller, like
he did tell you that he was gonna that he wanted to fight Gennady Golovkin on your podcast.
He did,
which actually made me laugh out loud when I heard it. But
I mean, like, and look, I don't blame him for not doing it. Like, but let's just stop with this. When I fought the best. So when I come back, I'm gonna fight the best. No, you're not. Like, He's digging this hole for himself. The people are just gonna look at his quotes and be like, Oscar, you said you're gonna fight this guy, and now you're fighting that guy.
But what purpose would it? Look, Oscar De La Hoya was one of the best fighters to ever live. He fought virtually all of the great fighters in his weight classes in his generation. Moved up weight class upon weight class upon weight class to where he didn't belong at middleweight. I mean, he's one of the best fighters to ever put on a pair of boxing gloves. And now he's 48 years old now.
Yeah.
I understand they had the competitive drive for forever, but at a certain point, I mean, you know, Gennady Golovkin would be the young guy in that fight. Think about that. 39-year-old Gennady Golovkin would be
a decade younger.
You know, exactly. I mean, so and you don't want to see Oscar De La Hoya or any fighter who's 48 or 49 years old be put into that position where you could get hurt. I don't think anyone would license Oscar De La Hoya against Gennady Golovkin in a real boxing match, but still, yeah. I mean, but just as it relates to Jake Paul, if Oscar wants to come back in 6-round exhibitions or 8-round exhibitions and capitalize on his popularity and his place in the sports history, he's more than welcome to do that. I would just hope that he's taking training seriously, and that what we saw last night is not a reflection of how he's going to be getting ready for this fight in July.
Yeah, my thing with Oscar is that I think Oscar still has the ability to be the most influential promoter in boxing. He's not right now, and that's largely a mess of his own making, but his name still resonates with young fighters. You know, Virgil Ortiz, Ryan Garcia, like, these young guys seek the approval of Oscar De La Hoya. Like, they want to be in the quote-unquote De La Hoya business. You get these young up-and-coming Olympians. Who do they hear about when they're part of the U.S. Olympic team? Oscar De La Hoya, gold medal, 1992, the golden boy. You think that doesn't resonate with these guys? If Oscar could just get his stuff together and commit fully to being a boxing promoter, he could still become the most powerful boxing promoter that's out there. I really believe that. I don't think he has the kind of savvy, of course, of Eddie Hearn, who has got, you know, his finger in like 19 pies. I mean, Eddie's doing these, he's finishing up the Andrade fight, and then he's doing these like YouTube interviews where he's talking about a fight in Milan like next Friday. Like, you know, what Eddie does is a story unto itself. But Oscar's ability to attract all the best American and Mexican talent is still there. It's still within him. He just needs to get his stuff together and completely commit to being a boxing promoter. If he does that, I mean, he can have, I think, a really productive, still productive post-fight career. But right now, you just don't see him, Keith, turning that corner. You don't see him looking in that direction.
Yeah, and Chris, of course, they just lost the biggest star in American boxing. I mean, they had Canelo Alvarez and helped build him into the attraction that he is. And Canelo walked away from them because he did not want to.
And are having major problems right now with the, let's call him arguably the best young star in American boxing, in Ryan Garcia.
Maybe the most marketable young star in American boxing. I don't know about the best. Look, Ryan Garcia has that appeal with the young people and the social media influencer crowd and all that kind of stuff. There's no two ways about that, but they are having issues with him also. That Virgil Ortiz, one of the best young fighters in boxing, they also have him under contract, so they still have some talent. But the losing Canelo is a blow that is very, very difficult to overcome. So, it depends on what happens with Ryan Garcia here in the next year or so and Virgil Ortiz to see which direction the company will go. But, I mean, there aren't many companies that overcome the loss of a fighter that significant and who's that much of a part of what they represented for them moving forward. So, you know, that's very difficult. And Garcia could, but like you said, Chris, they're having problems with Ryan Garcia now. So, I mean, for their sake, that, you know, they hope they can rectify those issues as they move forward here. But if they can't, well, you know, then they have Virgil Ortiz and, you know, a couple other, Joseph Diaz Jr., a couple other fighters that are solid.
Yeah, we aren't that far removed from Joseph Diaz being pissed off at them. I mean, that was like 6 months ago when Jojo Diaz was on social media getting irked at some of the things that were going on at Golden Boy. I just think Oscar's got – the potential is still there. I just think forget the boxing, get your house in order, your proverbial house in order, and then get focused on boxing promoting. Let's finish, Keith, with the Showtime schedule, which was announced last week. I did dump all over Jermall Charlo versus Montiel. I still hate that fight, but I think there are some good fights on this Showtime slate. And for me, the most excited I get, and I'm sure you would agree, is the Jermall Charlo, Brian Castaño fight, which happening midsummer, a four-belt unification fight at junior middleweight. Castaño is probably not somebody everybody's heard of. He took the belt off Patrick Teixeira in a terrific performance a few months ago, but he is a pressure fighter. Like, he is coming to fight. Like, this is not going to be... This won't be a fight for the faint of heart. Like, this is going to be a war, I think, for as long as it lasts. And all credit to Jermall Charlo, who, you know, since he's won those titles, he had the hiccup with the controversial loss to Tony Harrison. He went back out, avenged that loss a couple of fights later. He then turned around and fought Jason Rosario in a unification fight. And now he's stepping in and fighting for another major world title. I mean, I had a conversation last week with Tony Harrison, and we know Tony Harrison badly wants that third fight with Jermall Charlo. But even Tony was saying to me, he's like, I don't really begrudge Jermall. Like, Jermall is not, you know, I don't think he's avoiding me, but he's not, he wouldn't be avoiding me to fight lesser fighters. He's fighting the best guys out there at 154 right now. So that to me, Keith, is the cream of the crop in that Showtime schedule.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a full unification fight. It's the first full unification fight in the history of the 154-pound division. It's on Showtime. It's not on pay-per-view. Like, the Rosario fight was part of a pay-per-view combo with the Jermall Charlo, Sergey Derevyanchenko fight. It's on the network. It's the best fight of the, I think there were 13 fights altogether maybe that they announced, seven world title fights, but that's the best one, July 17th. I've been told that it'll probably be somewhere in Houston, although that's not solidified yet. But yeah, that's an excellent fight. I would expect, and Jermall Charlo deserves a lot of credit. I mean, he has created all these imaginary enemies like a lot of fighters do, thinks the world's against him and all that kind of stuff. I don't really know why he does that. But at the same time, he has taken all of the challenges at 154 pounds that he possibly could take, whereas his brother is being criticized for his level of opposition. Jermall has run toward those challenges. And I thought that he won the first fight against Tony Harrison. I thought it was a very close fight, but I thought he won. I think he should be undefeated personally, but came back and avenged that loss, obviously, and now has beaten Jason Rosario and is now fighting Brian Castaño. And, you know, within the next 3 months could be the fully unified 154-pound champion. Nothing not to like there. As far as the rest of the schedule goes, Chris, there's some good, other good fights on there. There are a couple of fights that, you know, they just kind of are what they are. You know, Chris Colbert against Yuriorkis Gamboa. I mean, Gamboa is apparently going to fight every 130 and 135-pound champion and lose badly, right?
Just bleeding his name, just bleeding the whatever's left out of that Gamboa name.
Yeah, and at least he's moving back down in weight, I guess, if you want to look at something positive to take from it. I don't know, but... But I'll say this, Chris Colbert, to me, was very impressive in his last fight against Jaime Arboleda. That was the best performance I thought of Chris Colbert's career. So he's kind of on the rise here. I would have liked to have seen him fight maybe a younger challenger. But again, you know, Yuriorkis Gamboa has some name recognition for whatever that's worth. And it's the interesting thing I thought about that one is it's on 4th of July weekend. So you kind of got a fight that might not be all that appealing to the public, and it's on 4th of July weekend, so I don't know what the viewership for that type of telecast would be. But I'll say, you know, there are some other good fights on there. So, you know, look, Rigondeaux is 105 years old, right? But he's still really good, and he's still – and he doesn't – his legs aren't what they once were, but he still has only lost one time to Vasily Lomachenko, so – him against Casemiro will be a fun fight, I think, for as long as it lasts, because I think the fact that Rigondeaux's legs aren't what they once were, he's going to stand and fight Casemiro, who's a huge puncher. So that fight is an interesting fight in the bantamweight division, which I think is August 14th on Showtime. Toward the back end of the schedule, Chris, first, I think Brandon Figueroa, based on the way he fights against Luis Nery, is going to be a very entertaining fight on May 15th. And the winner of that fight will then go into a unification fight against Stephen Fulton on September 11th. I mean, that's an excellent fight. Kudos to Stephen Fulton for taking that kind of fight.
On that, Keith, on that line of thinking, like, I love what Showtime is doing in that particular division, because you got Danny Roman on the undercard of that fight, and Danny is another guy that is excellent. Like, he's a great, a really good 122 pounder who had that close loss to MJ Akhmadaliev a year or so ago. So you'll put him in that mix, presumably, as well, if he doesn't get a rematch with Akhmadaliev. And then, I like it when you're setting up other fights. You have a good fight, Nery and Figueroa, and then the winner of that fight in September, just a few months later, getting a unification fight against Stephen Fulton. I like when there's, you know, a plan, not just a good fight, but a plan to have an even better fight right afterwards.
Yeah, and that's the thing I think that Stephen Espinoza deserves credit for here, not only here, Chris, but in what they did with their last schedule and a lot of what he has done in the past. Sometimes you might have to take a fight that's not particularly appealing because it's leading to another fight between the winner of that fight and another fight that you're going to broadcast later. Espinoza tries to get it. He wants the fights for the, and sometimes you just take fights because you have to, and because they're in business with PBC and you just have to, guys are, you know, have fights owed to them, and they're, you know, but he tries anyway to get fights that lead to bigger fights. And there's evidence of that in this Showtime schedule. And sure, there are some fights, like, I think with any other schedule, like with the top rank schedule that they have, or with, you know, Matchroom, there's going to be fights that people aren't that interested in. That's just the nature of boxing. You're not going to have the top guys fighting the top guys every time. And sure, it's frustrating for viewers, and you know, the media is going to criticize it to some degree. But I think here, I think you have some examples of, you know, of course, Jermall Charlo against Montiel is an outlier. But I think you have some good fights on this schedule. You know, the Donaire or Wally fight, which is rescheduled from December because of the COVID situation, I think that's a good fight also. The Tank Davis fight is, you know, Tank Davis, whether people like it or not, is a pay-per-view fighter now. So anyone expecting him to be on Showtime, or he's never fought on Fox, but are on Fox or whatever, it's just not happening. So
do you understand, like, we've known about the Barrios fight for a while now. Do you understand it? Like, I don't know if I quite get it that, like, you know, Barrios is a pretty, I think he's a dangerous guy, you know, for Gervonta. He's big, strong. He's a real 140. And for Gervonta, what do you gain from beating Mario Barrios? Like, I swear to God, if anyone mentions that secondary title that Barrios has at any point in time, it's ludicrous. Like, it's not a real title fight. It's the land of make-believe. And Barrios, I just don't understand what Tank gains from it besides clearly some money.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree with you on this, Chris. And I said this from the beginning, that it's a weird fight in the sense that he's not going to get a ton of credit for winning the fight, because I don't think Barrios is a tough kid. Can punch a little bit. He has a secondary WBA title. I mean, who doesn't at this point, right? I mean, everybody has a secondary WBA title. But this is no, you know, Barrios, he's a solid 140 pounder. But Davis is going to go into the fight as a clear favorite, even though he's technically moving up two weight classes to do it. But there is some danger in it, in that he's much bigger than him, and he's fought at 140 pounds for the last 4 years or so. And he's just naturally big. He's probably 5 inches taller or so than Gervonta Davis. And Gervonta Davis is a small guy. I mean, you're obviously much taller than both of us. But I mean, when I stand next to Gervonta Davis, I'm not tall, and he's shorter than me. So, like, and Barrios is about 5'10", 5'10", 5'10", 10 and a half maybe. He's much, you know, he's much taller than him. He's accustomed to the weight class. He's not a devastating puncher, but he's got enough power to be dangerous. So while Gervonta Davis should get some credit if he goes in there and, let's just say, he knocks out Mario Barrios, he should get some credit for it because he's moving up two weight classes. But what's going to happen is if he beats him in that way, they're going to say, oh, well, Mario Barrios wasn't that good. He cherry-picked 140-pound secondary champion in order to skip the guys at 135 pounds, or maybe even some at 130 pounds, that people actually want to see him fight. Whether that's altogether fair, I'm not sure, but But he's not fighting any of the 135-pounders, 130-pounders that people want to see him fight. Whether that's all his fault or not is sort of irrelevant.
Last thing, do you believe that we talked about fights setting up fights? Is there any chance that Charlo Montiel and Benavidez Uzcategui sets up Charlo Benavidez before the end of the year?
I think it's hard to say, Chris, because I don't know that Jermall Charlo is fully committed at all to moving up to 168 pounds. Because I go back to the interview that he did recently with Brian Custer, in which he said he had no interest in doing it, but he would do it. You know, later in the interview, he said that. So I don't know if he's serious about it or not. And again, unless Benavidez is in a weird position, Chris, or a bad position, and it's no one's fault but his own for losing the title twice without actually losing a fight, he has no leverage now. He's an entertaining fighter, and people want to see him fight. But why would you fight him? Because I heard this, you know, people were saying, oh, well, Caleb Plant should fight Benavidez before he fights Canelo. Are you crazy? I mean, the biggest payday of Caleb Plant's life is awaiting him in September. Why would he risk it against David? Even if he felt that David Benavidez couldn't beat him, it's still a risky fight. Why would you go fight him before that? Caleb Plant's best order of business is just to wait to see what happens May 8th. Assuming Canelo beats Billy Joe Saunders, you fight him. There's no point to him fighting David Benavidez, despite their rivalry and everything. It's his own doing. He has no leverage right now.
Yeah, he's in a tough spot, and you know he's had so many problems with that weight too. You wonder how long he's going to be at that weight class. Yeah. He might decide to move up to 175 at some point. But yeah, those two fights, those are the least I'm excited about. You know, I think Benavidez just rolls through Uzcategui in pretty easy fashion because Uzcategui's not looked very good lately.
I think it's just kind of a state. It's an eliminator. It's a WBC eliminator, probably to get him back position to. Well, the interesting
good that Uzcategui's an eliminator since he beat a guy that was 20-28 in his last time.
Well, here's where it could become interesting, Chris. If he beats him, he would become the mandatory contender for Canelo.
Yeah, and we all know the WBC is going to go out of their way to make sure that Canelo will be franchise champion WBC at some point. We all know that's coming.
You think?
Oh yeah, no. Come on.
You're probably right, but look, it would put some pressure on Canelo if he's going to remain at 168 pounds. Just say he beats Saunders and Plant, and let's say Benavidez is his mandatory contender. Well, is he going to move back down to 160? I don't know.
Canelo's not going back to 170.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
I talked to Canelo. Yeah. I don't think Canelo's going anywhere. I don't think he's going to 175 again, unless there's like a Bivol undisputed championship on the line where it's, you know, legacy defining. I think he's going to hang at 168 and, you know, fight the best there and have guys come up. That's why, like, Benavidez and Charlo, I mean, this is, again, like, you know, looking at boxing logically, which is never the right thing to do. But Benavidez and Charlo, like, the winner of that fight, that would get Canelo's interest, especially if it's Charlo. Like, that would pique his interest for a fight in mid-2022. I don't know. That's just the way I see it. Keith, always good to talk to you, man. I'm sure we'll do another emergency podcast in a few weeks when something else comes up.